give those to you guys. Very exciting paperwork. Well, it's wonderful to be here with you at the 7 o'clock service. Don't always get here because we're doing church at 5 and a little bit of excitement from over there. Do you know, I could tell you so many stories about this building, what's happened in this building. The great and glorious stuff and the horrendous stuff. And yet the church family, and that's what we are, church's family, have just kind of walked with me throughout it all. And do you know one of the things that I love that we do here as a church really well in this building is we like to party. And you would have seen that on the video up there that Ash did for us. I must tell you a little funny story from Ash and Becky's wedding. So this was the next morning, okay, and we're all a bit blurry-eyed. And were you on the sound desk at the back there? I think you were. Anyhow, so they've been playing some music through the sound desk for the kind of disco bit at the end, and the band had finished doing a kind of warm-up bit at the beginning of the morning, beginning of the 9:30 service, just put their instruments down to get a quick drink. And so we slapped on the CD that was at the back there, thinking that it would be just something nice and mellow. And all you heard coming through was, "I'm bringing sexy back." It was a bit of an experience. It's kind of rushed to the back there. But, you know, I do love to party. I love to dance. Interestingly, two of our stories had dancing in tonight. I love it when the lights go off in the church and the party lights go on. Now, Joe, where is Joe? She disappeared. She's hiding over there. Jo was meant to bring me a glitter ball tonight, okay, and she forgot. So you have to imagine a glitter ball at this point. But I love it when the party lights go on and the music starts and they're all up here dancing on the floor. Any of you been to a party when they're all dancing up the floor of here? Adam has been to many parties. In fact, Adam, was it you or Sam who used to run off the walls here? That would have been both of you. Him and his mate Sam, who he was talking about, used to run off the walls. It was very, very scary. But hey, if Sam came to know the Lord, it was all worth it, wasn't it? But they're down there, they're dancing. And you know, there's a bit of me that really, really wants to join in. But, you know, I'm a woman of a certain age. You know, I'm ordained now. I wear a dog collar occasionally. And, you know, so I'm not the first one up on the dance floor. And yet there's a kind of draw in me. It's like a magnet. I want to get down there. I want to have a boogie with everyone else. And so I end up kind of sitting on my chair, having a little wiggle, having a little dance away. Anybody else do that? Yeah. Until I can stand it no more. The lure of the dance floor is too big, and I'm out there strutting my stuff, my 40-something stuff. You know, I'm drawn into that dance. The church, the people, the body of Christ, at its best, is like a magnet. It's like a dance floor full of people calling to other people to come and join the dance, calling to other people to celebrate the bride and the bridegroom. Now, I'm going to show you a bit of a video. Thankfully, it's not of me dancing, okay? So let me put your mind at rest here. In fact, this is worse than me dancing. But it's very interesting. It shows this principle of people being drawn together.
Leadership. The first follower transforms a body.
I love that video. Isn't it great? I think a perfect illustration there, don't you? Do you know, it's interesting though that even in that kind of spoof video up there, there was a little phrase that really stuck out to me, which was, movement must be public. And it's not good enough to strut our funky stuff here in the building. We need to get out there and publicly strut our funky stuff. We need to take the dancing out to the world so that they can see and that they can join in with us. Now, Jesus doesn't use the analogy of dancing and the church. Well, at least I couldn't find it anywhere. But he does use two different analogies in Matthew. If you want to whip your phones out at this point and find Matthew 5, verses 13 to 16. If you've got an old-fashioned Bible, that's fine too. Ah, the little sound of phones going off there. The bleep, bleep, bleeps. Okay. It is up on the screen, but it's always good to find it in front of you too. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. That's what we're trying to do with our missional communities. Our missional communities are groups of lights on lampstands out there in the community in North London, shining bright for Jesus. Because there's something about them physically happening outside the building that is hugely attractive to people. It's a way of us multiplying our mission. Now, you know, I'm the neighbourhood pastor. I do a lot of outreaching for my job. But if it was only me doing this, we wouldn't get very far, would we? I mean, there are only 24 hours in the day, and as wonderful as I am, I can't reach the whole of North London. But actually, our missional communities can. Because they multiply mission way out there in our workplaces, our schools, our networks, our neighbourhoods, through people who have needs. And that's why this Easter we're doing a bit of a radical thing. The church gathered isn't going to go on the high road this Easter. No, we are going to multiply out in our missional communities and be lampstands out there and celebrate Easter. And we're putting our money where our mouth is as a church. So take note, missional community leaders. There's £100 going for any missional community that wants to do something on Easter Saturday to reach out. But that's about multiplying the lampstands out there. It's interesting, though, that Jesus, when Jesus is talking to the gathered group, he says things like, "You are the salt of the earth." And, you know, in our very North London way, in our very individualistic way, we think that's me, don't we? But in the culture at the time then, you was you. You, plural. You, the gathered people. So you, the gathered people, are the salt of the earth. You, the gathered people, are the light of the world. So here Jesus is saying that we, the church, us gathered people, need to be lights, lampstands out there. But actually, he's also saying that we need to be the salt of the earth. And I just want to read you what it says from the Message translation, because I love this. It's coming up on the screen. "Let me tell you why you are here. You're here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. So church, this is why you're here. You're here to be the salt seasoning, to bring out the God flavors of this earth. The church is there so people can taste what life is like when it's lived with God. And that doesn't mean a boring, a bland, a monotone life. No, it's a little bit more exciting than that. Now, I thought I'd illustrate this with some crisps. Ryan, could you give these out kind of sporadically to this side? Henry, could you do the same for the other side? You can share these around. Now, at the beginning, guys, I don't want you to put the salty bits in, okay? We have a little taste test here. So these are, these came out when I was a kid. It makes me feel very old. But these are salt and shake. And inside your packet of crisps, you should find a little salty bit, okay? How would you, no putting the salt on yet. You may open the crisps, but no putting the salt on. Now, I've got to say, guys, what do you think? They're a bit bland and a bit boring. Have a go. What do you reckon? Not great. They're okay, but they're not what crisps were meant to taste like, really. Are they fighting down there for them? Here, guys, have a taste. They're okay, but they're not great. Now, what I want you to do now is put the salt on it and give it a good shake. Because the salt brings out the flavour. They taste like they're meant to taste. Maybe just a child in me, I love this bit. Oh, they're doing a bit of dancing with their crisps down the front. You're mixing metaphors, girls. Oh, they're better. They are much, much, much better. Hey, have a taste of these. These are good. Now, these I could have with half a lager. They're nice. Here, have a taste. There we go. Here, have the end of the packet.
Thank you.
They taste better, don't they? You don't think they do? Margaret, you're just odd. Crisps crisps are meant to be salty. They taste better with salt. The salt brings out the flavour of the crisps. And so we, as Christians, as the church, are put in this world to bring out the God flavour of the earth. And as I say, we're not meant to be bland or boring or monotone. We're meant to show people what life is really like in all its technicolored gloriousness. Jesus said, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. They may have it with salt. They may have it with flavor. They may have it with glorious technicoloredness. So that's what we're meant to be doing as Christians, as a church gathered. We're meant to be drawing people into the dance. We're meant to be showing them how to live by being lights way out there in the community and by helping them to taste as well as see what it's like to live with God as your King. But why? What are people going from and what are they going to? What is the trajectory, the point of the church? Well, I did a lot of talking about this while I was over in Haiti, and some of my little snapshots are going to come up now. I don't know whether you can see them there. You know, I had the privilege of going over to Haiti with the organization Compassion, and they sponsor children amongst many, many other things that they do. And it's a fantastic organization. They work with the poorest of the poor all around the world. And one of the many things I love about them is for them, it's all about raising up indigenous leaders. You know, it's not about the Westerners coming in and doing it all for people. It's all about raising up indigenous leaders so that they can lead. And Haiti is, it's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, but just, am I right? I didn't know that the West had hemispheres, but there you go. But it's one of those things that I remembered. But we went, first of all, in one of those little MAF planes, Mission Aviation Fellowship planes. There was eight seats, and you had to be weighed in and all your luggage weighed in. And when you were weighed in, you got your little sticker. Thankfully, they didn't put your weight on your sticker. That was all right. But I just had to throw caution to the wind and stand on the scales at that point. I think my luggage did weigh more than I did actually put together, but there you go. But we went to Lagana, which is a little island off of Haiti. And if Haiti is poor, over there it is even poorer. You'll see a picture up there of a home with no concrete base. It's actually on the beach because beach is free land. Anybody can live on the beach. And literally it's a kind of tarpaulin and other bits holding it together. And yet these families that live in there send their kids to school and to programs looking immaculate. I mean, I have trouble and I have a house. And their kids absolutely look amazing when they go to school. But there are some real telling signs because the kids have got tinges of ginger in their hair, which for black kids mean that there's malnutrition there. It's really, really sad. And you walk around the beaches and you're kind of looking for the toilets. And toilets are a whole different game in Haiti. It's, you know, luxury is a kind of hole with a wooden plank over there. But there are none of those where the majority of the people in Lagana live. Because they live on the beach, they have to use the beach as their toilet. And so it's not somewhere you'd go swimming or sunbathing. They are the poorest of the poor over there. And yet an organization like Compassion go in and they link up with a local church. And a village over there with about 2,000 or 3,000 people, and they're not sure how many because there's no records of how many people are in villages. You really wouldn't keep information like that. So, you know, it's not hugely important. But there are 300 children sponsored in that village of 2,000 to 3,000. You can imagine that touches nearly every family in that village. And we think, in with our Western ways, but what is it like for those children who aren't sponsored? And yet their community doesn't think like that. They're overjoyed that their neighbours and that their friends' children have got sponsored. Because they too, like in Jesus' time, view it much more as a community you than a personal you. I just wonder, and Henry will probably shoot me for this, or Caroline will, but we as a church could change a whole village. If we as a church sponsored kids in an area, we could change a whole village. It's an amazing thought, isn't it? This summer at New Wine, we're going for sponsoring 750 kids. We did 300 last year, but that's two villages. That's really exciting. But the thing I love about Compassion is you don't see Compassion t-shirts and banners everywhere. What you see is the local church. They work through exclusively the local church. Their child survival programs are done through the local church. Their projects for children and child sponsorship are done through local churches. Their leadership schools, which help kids get to university, but also put Christian leadership in there, are done through the churches. Their programs to help young people know how to build effectively and right and to be car mechanics and to be electrician, it's all done through the local church. It's utterly amazing. It's the local church is bringing the whole community together. But just spare a prayer for the pastor over there, Pastor Michael. He has been pastoring in Lagana in there are one or two poorer villages, but in the village that we went to that takes 2.5 hours on very bumpy road to get to, because nobody builds any roads there. There's no money to do that. And over there, if you have a water hole, which is an hour's walk, you're doing well. And if that water hole is fresh water, you're doing well, because a lot of them are salty over there. But this pastor is pastoring his church in the worst poverty that I've ever seen. How do you keep going? How do you keep bringing the gospel to those people and helping them? An amazing man. Interestingly, he's not married, and I wonder whether that's a choice, because what people said to me was that actually they've had pastors there before and they've been married, and because then they start to have kids, they move out of those areas. But it's the church at its best. It's the church bringing the whole community together. And one of the things that they talk about in Compassion is this kind of little three arrow thing that's going to come up here now. Far from Christ, Christ close to Christ, and Christ-like. So what they see is they see people and communities that are far from Christ. Then people come close to Christ, and then they become like Christ, Christ-likeness. And what they talk about in Compassion and in the churches that are working over there is, if you want to click on one, is that it's actually the role of the church to bring people from being far from Christ to bringing people to be close to Christ. It's like that dance that we were talking about earlier, that just so attracts people, that it brings people into the orbit of the church and therefore brings them to Christ. And we heard that in the stories that we heard here. So that community, that church community, being an attractive community. But also, proximity is important here. It's no good having a church community that's hugely attractive, stuck away from the people. Proximity is important. We need to go to the community, whether that's we move our building, whether that's that we go out in missional communities, whether it's that we take our stories, our good news stories, out to our workplaces, our schools, our universities. But proximity is important. And then they talk about actually the thing that brings people from being close to Christ to Christ-likeness is actually the power of God. It's the power of God, but it's also people's choices. And you know, for me as a pastor, and hopefully for you guys who've got friends who you're trying to bring to Christ and you want to see them changed and transformed into Christ-likeness, the fact that it's God's job to bring people from close to Christ to Christ-likeness is a kind of weight off of our shoulders. And I think it's a biblical principle, if you want to click on one. Paul talks about it in 1 Corinthians 3, verse 6. He says, I plant the seed, Apollos waters it, but God has been making it grow. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. So we've looked at a couple of analogies of the church. We've looked at the church being a dance that people are drawn into. We've looked at the church being a light there out in the world. We've looked at the church being salt, bringing out the God flavors of the world that we live in. We've looked at the role of the church, what the church's job and role is. But I want to leave you with a poem today, which was written by a friend of mine that she gave me only yesterday. And I felt that it fitted in really well to what we were talking about today. And it talks about God's personal invitation to us to join in the dance. I wonder whether Alice and the band would like to come back up as I read it. And, you know, if you are here today and you've not said yes to Jesus' invitation, you don't feel part of the dance, you're sitting on the edge on your chair having a little boogie, but you've not joined in yet, God gives you a personal invitation tonight. Maybe you just want to close your eyes. Kneeling, head bowed, you ask for the next dance. But I smile shyly and protest. I hope no one's watching. I don't know the music. I've got two left feet. And anyway, you don't need to bow. Can't we talk as equals? Why not later? Ask somebody else. You smile and our eyes meet. Pools of overpowering love brim back beseechingly, and I choose to nod my head slowly. You grasp me closer than comfort, and it feels completely safe and natural as it's meant to be, as you gently lead me to the floor. And we're off, my amateur footfall disguised by your masterly, elegant, graceful steering as we twirl and move, gathering speed and in perfect beat. I laugh as I surpass my own ability, honored to be have chosen.